Welcome to another edition of Politics Unwrapped. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. We have a great guest today. I haven't seen him, I think, since the Democracy Convention in Madison, Wisconsin. Anyhow, today we are honored to have Michael Levitin. He's a journalist and co-founder, editor of the Occupied Wall Street Journal. He started a report as a reporter covering the Cochabamba water war in 2000 for the English language newspaper Bolivian Times. He earned his master's degree from the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism and later worked as a freelance correspondent in Barcelona and Berlin covering politics, culture, and climate change. His writing has appeared at The Atlantic, Guardian, Financial Times. So look, everywhere. We have a true scholar with us today who formed a very important part of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Michael Levitin, welcome to Politics Unwrapped. How are you doing today?
Egberto, pleasure to be here, man. Very good.
Look man, you've started from the start of the movement, as you explained in your book. I mean, when they got to Sagadi Park, you were there. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the genesis of the Occupy movement?
All right. For everyone who's been meticulously following it this week, given that we're on the 10-year anniversary, I presume not everyone has been thinking about it. I sure have for many years now. It was September 17th, 10 years ago, this week, coming this Friday. I wasn't there at the very start of the movement. I came the week after it began, the second Saturday of the movement, which in fact was the Saturday when Occupy blew up, when the famous pepper spray cop nailed a couple of white women in the face with bright pepper spray, and they fell down to the ground and shrieking, and it caused a sensation. I think the fact that they were a couple of young white women protesting peacefully, somehow the nation saw this, and the video went viral. Occupy Wall Street took off, and really the movement was born from that moment, the second Saturday of the movement. And I moved into the park like so many people. I was supposed to take a flight the next day, 2 days later, to go back to Berlin, actually, which you introduced me as having history there. I wasn't intending to stay in New York, but this the showing up there, the moment that I saw and the intensity that I sort of could immediately perceive of all of these young people getting together in a way I'd never seen protesters unite and sort of organize in a very in a much more serious way, frankly, than I'd ever seen activism in this country appear before. And I knew something quite different was happening. And I helped start this newspaper, and everything else followed from there. The movement was
tell folks where they can find that it's not a blog, it's actually a full-blown paper.
Oh, the paper's long gone. That was it was a paper of the moment.
I'm talking about your website.
Oh, my website, michaellevitin.com. My book, Generation Occupy, just appeared yesterday through Counterpoint Press. And this story really, you know, I think a lot of people now with the 10-year anniversary are reanalyzing or trying to remember what Occupy got wrong, why it disappeared so quickly, what was its message. What really has obsessed me and kept me in the game all these years, because I did continue to edit and write and follow the trends of the movements through Occupy.com. That was a right. different site. That was different from the Occupied Wall Street Journal, which once it ran out of money, we stopped printing copies. We ran about 500,000 copies of that newspaper over 6 months, over 5 or 6 editions. But this story that I've told now in the book is really looking at the impact. I'm much more interested not in what Occupy got wrong as a kind of a chaotic, colorful, disorganized, structureless, leaderless movement. You can give it all of those qualifiers and say that it could have done better, it could have done this. Yeah, it faded from view, and we know for many reasons it did. But what I really have been interested in and studying and following is the many ripples and the waves that it set off politically, in activism, in our economy, and in labor, in workers recognizing their rights and everything we've seen. I'd be glad to talk in any specifics that you want to, but that's really what I've been trying to get at is, what has this decade brought us that may not have emerged in this way? Would we have a $3.5 trillion budget bill that essentially is looking to balance out the scales and diminish inequality in profound ways and put climate, clean energy infrastructure with hundreds of billions of dollars? I mean, would we have the current moment we're in? Not that we've succeeded yet, not that we've passed any significant legislation, but would we be here without Occupy? Would Bernie Sanders have been Bernie? Would we have had AOC? Would many things, would the fight for 15 have occurred? And so many things that have sprung from it. So that's what this book is addressing.
I think what you just said is so important. Let's not concentrate on the things that we did or got wrong. Let's concentrate on the things that we actually got right. Because in the aggregate, Occupy Wall Street changed this country. It changed the progressive movement. It gave validity to so much. And, you know, some of the issues that people talk about is the movement was so white, right? It didn't represent America. But what was so interesting about the movement is that those same white kids that got engaged are the kids that would have been elsewhere not thinking of this sort of thing that Occupy represents. So you have a part where you talk about Occupy activism. I'm going out of scope here with your book, but Occupy activism, that made a lot of people who otherwise would not have been activists, activists for the good of us all. Why don't you explain it in that context?
Second here. Doors opening in a house filled with other people. The Occupy activism, the whole notion of activism, you know, in the Atlantic article I just wrote and published this week, it leads with the activism idea. In my book, it comes later because I need to get these bigger economic and political ideas out. But I think fundamentally, I mean, there's simply, we don't have this previous decade that we've just witnessed in a sense without Occupy. My case is that Occupy remade and reinvented activism for a whole generation, that it made protesting cool again. If you think of, you know, like the 60s and the 70s, you know, protesting went out. It wasn't cool. It was older white liberals. It was people out holding signs and trying to get signatures at little, you know, miniature rallies. Or it was the anti-globalization protests and people sort of trying to spur this larger workers movement and get young people energized. And it really was beginning. But then, as we remember, the Iraq war came along and sort of pulled the rug out. It was a big protest movement and people really tried to stop it, but they weren't, alas, effective. And we went to war. And when we saw what happened in the last couple of decades of those imperial, you know, adventures overseas, catastrophic failures. So protests weren't able to stop that. What Occupy did, it's like people rediscovered their courage in a profound way, and they went right to the core of the issue. They protested an issue you're not supposed to protest. They said capitalism and the system overall is the problem. They named the systemic crisis of inequality and the corporate corruption of our politics in these issues that really, frankly, since the New Deal, since the massive protests of the 30s that forced FDR to create the New Deal, Americans weren't out in the streets protesting capitalism and the moral bankruptcy of our economic system. So what Occupy did is it spurred and it pointed a finger at the 1%, which then became this sort of translatable 1%. The climate movement adopted that message. Occupiers, as you say, moved in the young, white, largely white, you know, liberal from whatever college educated class of occupiers. They transitioned and helped lead helped turn into the climate movement, which again looked at the 1%. It's the 1% fossil fuel industry and the lobbyists and the CEOs who are corrupting Washington politics and obstructing change to help save our planet. And as you said, with the whiteness, I mean, a lot of occupiers, with the conversations I had with people, they made a correction in the post-Occupy era. They joined Black Lives Matter. They saw where this racial analysis, racial justice was missing. And I think you and I talked about that several years ago as I was interviewing people for the book. And you are all full credit disclosure, Egberto, you have lines in the book, and I'm glad you got your piece in there because it was a really important point that it was missing the racial justice analysis. It was a really economic justice, but really wasn't talking to the 99% because people of color largely weren't participating and didn't see themselves in the movement. But it evolved, and Black Lives Matter took so much that Occupy helped generate in terms of the use of technology, how to spread viral memes, how to do a decentralized nationwide social movement that could catch fire instantly overnight with the same young generation. Of course, different issues and different priorities and different structure and leader. You know, they had actual spokespeople, actual people who helped steer the message at Black Lives Matter. They made many corrections, having studied from what Occupy got wrong. They consciously said, we're not going to be this structureless, leaderless thing. We're going to do it this way to get this concrete message across about police violence. But from Black Lives Matter, you see it all the way through. Standing Rock, the fight to, you know, defeat the water, the pipeline that was going to go through the Sioux Reservation in North Dakota. Massive protest using so many tactics of Occupy. And you see it in the wave of social movements, the Me Too movement. Would we have been able to take down the giant moguls, the white 1% who are, you know, abusing their power, the Harvey Weinsteins of the world? You know, would we have been able really to kind of shatter that wall had Occupy not sort of delegitimized the 1%? And it goes on and on to the Women's March, the way it was decentralized and organized to rise up against Trump and initiate the resistance. Indivisible, the really vocal, organized protests.
Yes.
You know, Occupy just gave a fire and it sort of lit the nation, this generation that's had enough. The climate generation, the March for Our Lives, the students in Parkland who initiated the March for Our Lives, and millions of people marched to end gun violence. And guess what? The NRA is seeing its last powerful days. Those guys, since the Parkland students sort of hit the hammer against that, you know, shattered their impenetrable wall, NRA is not and is not likely to ever be the same. And in terms of its influence on our government. So we see these impacts. And when Occupy, people say Occupy was a failure. Occupy left. All you have to do is look at where we are today as a culture, our politics of resistance and protest. And you see that, yes, it initiated this new era.
Let me tell you, I've been to several of the Occupies, from Occupies, D.C., Washington, D.C., Providence, San Diego, Houston, King, everywhere. And what you saw in there is that people finally, I mean, I don't want to make this a generational issue, but for a long time under Reaganomics, the baby boom generation kind of got complacent. And they allowed him to do quite a bit. And that Occupy generation came about and said, no mas. I don't know if you remember Roberto Mano de Piedra Duran from Panama, that boxer, they used to call him the hands of stone. He, when he was fighting with Leonard, he said, no more, no more, no mas. And it was like the Occupy generation said, it's going to be no more. And what Occupy, in my humble opinion, started, and I think you've articulated perfectly in your book. And folks, you got to get that book, Generation Occupy, Reawaken America. We can reawaken in America Democracy by Michael Levitin. And it's not that he has several quotes of that I have in that book. Why I'm telling you to buy it, folks. I'm telling you to get this book because this is not only a refresher of all that we did in the Occupy movement in the early 2010s, this is actually a primer of what needs to continue. So check that book out, Generation Occupy, Reawakening America, American Democracy. I love the way that you split the book up. I love the way that you did it. I think it's important because in your, and folks, look at the table of contents. Occupy generation, what it is. Occupy economy, Occupy politics, Occupy climate, Occupy labor, Occupy activism, technology, world, future. Something that we all have to do if we are going to remake America that works for us all. And you encompassed all of that in the description of what occurred after 10 years and made it clear, no, Occupy was not a failure. Occupy was the seedling. Go ahead.
Was that a question?
Yeah, I wanted you to expand on that because you did such a great job in the book that yeah. I mean, like you stated very at first, we're not going to talk about all the things Occupy got wrong. Sure. Damn it. Everybody yeah. gets every movement. There are wrong things exactly. in it.
So many people, you know, the great activists who died in this last year, as I was putting the book,
CeCe,
Kevin Zeese. Kevin
Yes,
Zeese.
That's my buddy. Yeah.
Yeah, what wonderful man and an incredible life force to the left movement. The
Both he and his wife, yeah.
And Margaret Flowers, of course. I'm sure many people who watch your show are familiar with them and their group Popular Resistance. But something Kevin told me, I had you call it luck or whatever. I got to speak with him really in depth in an interview for this book, along with other, 50 other people I interviewed or so. But what he said was really the... a lasting message, and some other people echoed him, which is that social movements they rarely succeed overnight. Did the civil rights movement succeed
No,
overnight?
We're still working on it.
You work on it, and this idea that really you don't even begin to see lasting changes from a movement, maybe for a decade, maybe for a generation, the way that Zeese and other people have talked about, you don't get to see real changes from a movement, maybe for 30 years or 40, when you really see the structural, look at this budget right. bill. If Congress and the Democrats if the progressive voice wins and the Bernie movement can put, what Bernie started, he has been shepherding this bill through Congress, but it's like, if they can do this and we can get that agenda pushed through and turned into law, that will look a lot more like an actual win for something like Occupy. Not that you can credit it, not that Occupy.
I beg to differ. I do credit Occupy. I think when I talk about, like I said, both of us, we were all over the country when in the different from when it transitioned to places and like Democracy for America or Democracy for America. What was it in Madison? Democracy Convention, where all of us got together. And I mean, the thing about it is, absent Occupy, the impetus to do the things that all these other organizations feel they can do now would not have been there.
And yes, and the people now who are driving, I think the big thing that if you want, some people say, well, give me some concrete, give me what did Occupy really do? If you say Occupy changed things, okay, we got activism, we have a new generation of young people who are completely motivated and turned on to protest and to resistance, real live, this is existential, this is an issue for me, I got to go out in the streets for climate, for gun safety, for defense of democracy when it came to Trump. But if you want to talk concrete, who is essentially steering the Democratic Party in the last few years? It isn't the old Clinton Democrats.
No, it's not
the Obama Democrats. It's the Elizabeth Warrens,
exactly.
Bernie Sanders, and the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez,
exactly.
and her whole train of Justice Democrat-aligned people who essentially are trying to rebalance the scales of inequality and give back to the people and get rid of corporate funding in elections, or at least run campaigns that don't rely. I mean, it transformed our politics. It gave Bernie Sanders, as many people told me, I think you probably did in our interview too, we wouldn't have had Bernie Sanders, the all-popular, meteoric, take-over-the-airwaves candidate of 2015 in the primaries in 2016, had Occupy not laid the ground and given us this inequality message, the billionaire class. You think America was ready to hear an old social democratic socialist from Vermont rail against the billionaire class and talk about the obscene corporate greed? It was Occupy that got people prepared for that. And of course, Bernie laid the ground for AOC and we're off to the start of a new generation of politics.
Well, look, I love this book. Why don't I ask this last question to everybody? Tell me, what would you have liked me to ask you that I didn't?
Geez, Egberto. There's
I do it all the time, you know?
Do it all the time. I guess, well, something that would be interesting about this was how to put, you said you liked how the story was put together, or how the book was put together. I think an interesting part of doing this in terms of the structure is how to tell a story. You know, Occupy told a story, right? The whole thing that Occupy got right, just to conclude on that message and that movement issue, is it was able to tell an old story that's been as old as civilization itself, right? Inequality, the pharaohs, the kings, the Mesopotamia. You go back to, you want to name your place, it's always been the mass of people under the few elites who've got the grain and who've got the gold and who've, you know, aren't distributing it fairly, right? We all know that. But to make that iconic, eternal, timeless story fresh again in the current context, to tell a narrative that punctured our otherwise totally distracted and diluted, and everybody's interests are diverse, it grabbed hold. It like took America by the throat and said, wait, you're going to listen to us because we're telling you a story that really matters. And for me to tell this story, which is so kind of complex, I think it took a combination of removing myself a bit to try to be objective and like a journalist and an observer. But I also put myself in the book because, and I'm a character in it, because I feel it's important to show people that everyday people, myself included, anyone who shows up at something, you just got to show up and participate. That was sort of what got me to Occupy. Like if I'd sort of just continued my plans and gotten on a plane and left, I just wouldn't have been part of this whole movement. And the last decade would have been quite different for me. But like this idea that regular people can do, you know, irregular or ordinary people can do extraordinary things, I think is a message that even this book kind of confirms. Cause I'm a journalist, but I just showed up and put myself in there. And I hope that the way that I convey and I'm able to tell this story, you know, reaches people. And yes, like you say, for future movements, that I hope young people take this story that is a decade old, and they might've only been 10 years old, not even, you know, able to, you know, comprehend much when Occupy was going on. But today they are our leader. They are our activists. They're our college students. They're our young unemployed. They're the people who need to mobilize. And I do hope they learn from this story, from what Occupy got wrong and improve on it, and from what it did so well, because we need 2.0 right now.
Michael Levitin, a good friend of mine, journalist and the author of Generation Occupy, Reawakening American Democracy. Folks, you've got to get the book. Those of us that want to make a difference, we got to understand how it was done and how we need to go forward and do it. Michael, thank you so kindly for having been on Politics and Right.
Thank you for talking. Very good. Keep it going. Always.
We spend a lot of time deconstructing the news, trying to parse it into a form that everybody can understand. We try to find those little nitpicks where it flies above the fray, etc. If you really like these videos that we do, I want to ask a big favor. Please go ahead, number one, subscribe to our channel, and number two, please join if you can. Thank you so kindly for watching. Keep watching. Please remember to share. We must populate the entire internet with our progressive message, a message that we know is what most Americans say that they want. So help us, please join.